Today, 2 hours of news, current affairs, and opinion, brought to you by Beyond Beijing. With in-depth panel discussions on domestic and global issues, today brings you the story behind the headlines. Locally produced, but with a distinctly international flavor. Today.
I'm Brandon Blackburn Dwyer, and this is Today on Beyond Beijing.
And I'm Zhao Yang. Today's big debate is on the Eurozone economy as recessions grips the zone and Greece finally gets its next bailout.
After our big debate, Joe Jingnan will be joining me for the Global Talk. We'll be debating mass protests in Egypt against President Morsi, DRC rebels saying they'll withdraw from Goma, the EU and IMF finalizing a deal with Greece, U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Susan Rice meeting her domestic critics, and a Hungarian leader calling for the registration of Jews. Then our China report brings us news of the U.S. declining to name China a currency manipulator, industrial profits rising sharply, a proposed change to the pension system, and five officials punished for corruption in school lunches. Then our global spotlight turns to tech, as special contributor John Artman breaks down the competition stretching across four screens, the impacts of so-called deep learning, and the makeup of Chinese netizens.
And then our Online Unleashed brings us your views on a local UK council removing children from a foster home over the family's politics.
Now, turning to the big debate. The Eurozone seems to have been a near-perma crisis since the start of the financial crisis in 2008. Struggling nations have implemented massive austerity measures to receive bailouts from the EU, the IMF, and the European Central Bank. Now, a double-dip recession is calling Europe's austerity plans into question. Sun Liang has more.
The Eurozone has fallen into its second recession since 2009. The 17-nation Eurozone's economic output fell by 0.2% in the second quarter and a further 0.1% in the third quarter. The market Eurozone Purchasing Managers' Output Index was 45.8, indicating severe contraction. Even long-standing economic pillars Germany and France are suffering as confidence wanes and exports fall. Germany's annual growth rate has fallen a full point to under 1%. Ratings agency Moody's has stripped France of its top-notch AAA rating, citing an uncertain fiscal outlook. Beta Bank's economist Robert Hover is concerned.
The downgrade of France is definitely a warning shot. France is the second biggest economy in Europe. We need France. And if France doesn't do its homework regarding its creditworthiness and the cleaning up of its state finances and competitiveness, then we have a problem, also for the rescue fund, because even here, France is the second highest payer into the fund. France must be strong.
Five smaller troubled nations currently receiving bailouts are also struggling. Greece, Spain, Italy, Portugal, and Cyprus are in recession. Under their bailout agreements, they are employing tough austerity measures, and the nations are seeing a decline in economic output and a sharp increase in unemployment. Greece has been of particular concern, as delays in adopting certain spending cuts has led to a delay in billions of euros from the EU and IMF. At a third meeting in recent weeks, Eurozone leaders and IMF agreed to reduce Greece's overall debt. The European Central Bank President Mario Draghi is seeing a relative return to confidence.
In June this year, European leaders decided to accelerate the move towards a financial union by creating a single bank supervisor centered around the ECB and by linking to the possibility that European banks, in due time and under certain conditions, could receive direct capital support from the ESM. Together with the announcement of the OMT, this led to much more benign market conditions that have prevailed in the recent months.
He adds, further reforms are still needed for tighter economic and monetary integration. For today on Beyond Beijing, I'm Zeng Liang.
Thank you, Zeng Liang. Today, our panel of experts will first look at the overall recession in the Eurozone, then at the nations receiving bailouts, including Greece, the larger economies in France and Germany, and finally, at the future of the Eurozone.
So today we are talking in the studio with Cui Hongjian, Research Fellow with the China Institute of International Studies. And also join us on the phone are Yanis Varoufakis, Professor of Economic Theory at the University of Athens, and also Jan Priver, Professor of Economics at HTW Berlin, the University of Applied Sciences.
Welcome, gentlemen, to the show. Good to have you with us.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, we always love to start out here, particularly on the Eurozone. It has been a near perma crisis since 2008. We've been covering it fairly consistently, so I have to ask, looking at the situation today, on a basic overview, Yanis, do you see us getting better, getting worse, or still stuck in the same problems?
Well, getting increasingly worse. There is absolutely no doubt that the fact that for 3 years now, the Eurozone has been in denial of the very nature of the crisis that we're facing. We have just been throwing good money after that, and we've been extending and prolonging the crisis, making it deeper, and bringing upon our nations a hardship which is utterly unnecessary, and making it that much more difficult, not only to recover from this Eurozone crisis, but even to sustain the pace of European integration at the broader level of the European Union.
Okay, and Jan, how do you see the situation from Germany?
Well, if we look at the Eurozone as a whole, with those 17 members, for the first time since 2009, we have a recession in this year that is minus 0.5%, and this makes the restructuring of debt much more difficult, increases unemployment, so it is a big thing. Although the forecast for next year optimistically is probably 0% or so growth, which might be a little bit better. But for the zone as a whole, it is a very bad thing. And if you take Germany out, we have 1.0 less GDP, and next year also a recession of 0.3%. So that is really a double dip recession, which makes things worse because we cannot respond to this kind of recession in the traditional way as we did it in 2009. So this is what we do not need. It's certainly a worsening of the situation in Europe.
Hongjian, do you agree with that? Definitely a worsening of the situation?
Yeah, exactly. I think with the current situation in the Eurozone, it depends on which kind of standard or which kind of time you will take a comparison. For example, if you take it as a compared with last year, I think it get better, because as we know now, the European Union and IMF are trying to do something more, especially from European side. They released more and more instruments from their toolbox to help the to get a resolution for some especially the debt countries. But of course, now the other problem is how the economy itself. As we know now, it's got a recession now, especially for Eurozone economy. So I think it's a bad news for especially for the market.
Mm. And Yang, actually, you mentioned that the Eurozone is now formally in a recession, but what is the central cause and the reason of this?
Well, it is pretty easy. It is an austerity recession. So it is not a normal recession, which we have every, 7-8 years or so. No, it is a recession because of very strong austerity fiscal policy in many countries, especially in those over-indebted countries. And this is not a very strong recession in that sense that GDP is falling on average very heavily. But on average in the Eurozone, it is a small recession, but it is enough to make it a special one because of these very severe austerity, pro-cyclical austerity measures. And secondly, a specificity of this recession is that the Eurozone is split in two parts. One part is in a severe recession, and the peak of the iceberg is Greece and Portugal, Ireland, and the other one is not so much in a recession, but only in a very mild recession so far. That is Germany, Netherlands, Finland, Luxembourg, and some others.
Mm. And Yanis, do you agree with Jan that this is an austerity measure, austerity recession? Or what other course do you think?
No, I agree entirely that austerity has given a new spin to the wheel of recession in the Eurozone as a whole. But permit me to put it in a broader context. Before the financial crisis, the global financial crisis of 2008, we had a monetary union which effectively encouraged a huge capital inflow from countries like Germany to countries like my own, Greece, Portugal, Spain, and so on and so forth. They created huge bubbles. Then in 2008, when globally liquidity was withdrawn as a result of the financial sector collapse, that capital withdrew like a vicious tide, leaving a debt overhang which was unsustainable. And Europe, European leaders, in their extreme idiocy, treated what is effectively a sequential bankruptcy problem involving both state and banking sectors as if it were not a bankruptcy problem, but instead that it was a problem of liquidity. So they heaped upon countries like Greece, Portugal, Ireland, and now Italy and Spain, huge new loans on condition that they will reduce the national income for which they will have to repay those loans. That's austerity. Now, it doesn't take a rocket science to realize that this is asking for trouble and pushing these countries into depression, which will then spread into, in the form of the ASEAN debt, milder recession, into the Netherlands, Germany, and so on and so forth. Even though we have two parts of the Eurozone now, and they are in different shapes, of course, we are in it together. Our ship is sinking. And, of course, the fact that some people are at lower decks compared to other people does not change the fact that the ship is sinking as we are proceeding at the moment.
Hong Jin, let me ask you something here. Interestingly enough, everyone seems to say that the situation is getting worse, a lot of people blaming the austerity policies here, but an interesting report came out, the 2012 Europlus Monitor, comes from a Lisbon-based think tank and the Berenberg Bank. They actually claim that while the Eurozone crisis is painful and has been devastating in the short term, in the long term, it's actually making the Eurozone as a whole stronger. It's making Greece more competitive. It's restructuring economies. It's making wage differentials different. Is that really possible? Can we be seeing a situation that looks so bad to us today, but in 3 or 4 years we're going to be saying, "Wow, that really made everyone better"?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's from how to say the different terms judgment. For example, of course, now in short term that we need to face worse and worse situation in Eurozone. But of course, in the long term, okay, now more and more people in European countries, now they get a consensus that, okay, we can have a bright future once we overcome the crisis now. But another problem, I think we need to get some more preconditions. For example, how could those countries, especially in European zone, and especially for those debt countries, they can overcome the crisis now. And then how is the coordination among the different member states? And also how get, more help or more assistance from outside world, especially from IMF, from the other bigger market, including China, like that. So I think certainly in short term it get worse and worse, but in long term, once European Union did good, homework, that would be better for European Union.
Yanis, let me go to you on this. One of the claims in the report here is that the restructuring of places like Greece is pushing down the cost of labor, thus making businesses more competitive. Is that a very convincing argument, considering the massive amounts of unemployment going on in the country in the short term?
It's a little bit like arguing that the death of the patient can be described as stabilization. Yes, it can be described as stabilization, but this is not necessarily a good thing. Look, the reason why Greece is becoming more competitive is because wages are falling precipitously. But when at the very same time the circuit of credit, the banking system is in bankruptcy, and you have a generalized bankruptcy of companies, regardless of their efficiency and profitability, do you get this? Regardless of their profitability, they're getting bankrupt because their bankers do not provide them with the liquidity which is necessary in order to function as normal businesses. Then you have an economy which is not getting more competitive. It is dying, and we are calling this death a kind of stability which may bring about benefits in the future. Now, it's not a bad thing that labor unit costs are falling, but if output is collapsing because the fiber and, you know, the circulation of economic activity ceases, then you can't be talking about improvement.
Okay. Well, let me go over to Jan in Germany on this one, because one of the discrepancies in this report that claims to be so optimistic about the Eurozone seems to be that on one hand, they say labor prices going down in Greece is helping the country become more competitive, but that the end of wage moderation in Germany, namely wages going up in Germany, is actually making Germany more stable. So how can we say that wages going up in one country is helping and wages going down in another country is also helping?
Well, let's come to the core of the issues. I think this is one of the very important issues to understand this strange European crisis. It's really a very strange crisis. We never had it in history of this kind. Well, what is the core? I don't think it is overall a sovereign debt crisis. Most people regard it as a sovereign debt crisis in those 17 member countries. But a sovereign debt crisis, it is mainly in Greece. In the other countries, it is a private debt crisis. Like in Spain, in Ireland, in Portugal to some extent, in Italy as well. And what is behind this? Behind this is an imbalance in the balance of payments of these countries. There's one group of countries spearheaded by Greece and Spain, Portugal, Ireland are on the same boat, so to speak. They have increasingly current account or trade deficits, and the other countries have trade surpluses, like Germany and Netherlands. How could this happen? It could happen for a number of reasons, and one of the reasons were a divergence in wage costs. In wage costs, that means that in some countries, wages increased too strongly over a longer period. In other countries, especially in Germany, wages increased too little. And this divergence created a divergence in competitiveness, and this needs to be remedied. And this is terribly difficult to do without a devaluation of the exchange rate, because we do not have an exchange rate any longer. Therefore, we have to do wage deflation. And very often in history, wage deflation works in a way that is destructive, that makes the economies worse, and does not lead to any sort of optimism. But we try a very big experiment that has never been tried in history.
All right. With that, we're going to take a pause in the conversation. Next section of the show, we're going to dive into one of the crisis, center points of the crisis here, of course, Greece, and namely the recent deal by the EU and IMF to finally provide funds to the troubled nation. You're listening to Today on Beyond Beijing.
Join our debate via Weibo. Go to weibo.com/todayonbeyondbeijing and send us your questions or ideas on today's big debate.
Listen to us on the go by subscribing to Today on Beyond Beijing's podcast on iTunes or listen online at radio.weibo.com and search for AM 846.
You're listening to Today on Beyond Beijing. I'm Brandon Blackburn Dwyer. Today's big debate is on the Eurozone's recession.
And I'm Zhao Yang. Today we are talking in the studio with Cui Hongjian from the China Institute of International Studies. And also joined us on the phone are Yanis Varoufakis from the University of Athens, and also Jan Priven from HTW Berlin, the University of Applied Sciences. But now back to our discussions. Now we want to shift the focus to a country, Greece. Actually, Greece is required to pass and implement a wide range of austerity measures to satisfy the bailout funds. So, Yanis, has Greece satisfied those requirements?
It certainly has. The question is, requirements for what? The requirement that Greece satisfied concern there are conditions, certain conditions that are part of the agreement between Greece and its lend is effectively the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund for the release of tranches of loans that have been previously agreed that were withheld over the last 5 or 6 months. So, Greece has fulfilled its obligations, effectively slashed around 11.5 billion euros of the budget for 2015, and now the tranches have been released. Now, the question, however, is whether those loans are the solution to Greece's problems. There are two positions in this. One is the official position of the European Union and of the Greek government that, yes, this is the solution. The solution is the release of these loans, which in conjunction, in combination with so-called reforms, especially in the labor market, will produce the goods, will reduce the debt in the long run and increase GDP, national income. In my estimation, however, these tranches of loans are part of the problem, not part of the solution. It's a bit like throwing gas or petrol on fire in order to extinguish it.
Mm. And Jan, what do you think? If Greece has satisfied these requirements, why the EU, the IMF leaders, they are still holding up releasing funds?
Well, the problem is that Greece has done much of the homework in the sense that they have done these austerity measures to a degree which is enormous. However, the debt of Greece is still very high and is increasing, or the debt to GDP ratio is increasing. And therefore, something has to be done immediately in order to release these funds from the IMF and the EFSF. And the solution for this problem, I think, is that we need a debt cancellation to some extent, and besides many other reforms, that is another issue, but the debt cancellation is necessary, and it was pushed by the IMF, but in the end we got a compromise, which in the details is not yet disclosed. But this compromise, in the core of this compromise, is a debt buyback program. That means Greece is given new loans from EFSF under certain conditionalities, and they are supposed to buy back loans at a low price in order to reduce the debt and to stretch the maturities in order to better cope with the repayment of debt and interest payments.
And Jan, you mentioned the debt to GDP issue. So why is this so important a target?
Well, the debt to GDP ratio means that the total accumulated debt to GDP, which is now around probably 170 or so percent by the end of this year, is an indicator for the repayment or for the interest payments to the creditors. And if you have to pay a huge amount of from your GDP on interest payments to the rest of the world or to the creditors, you have a huge amount in your budget and you make new debt in order to pay for the old debt. And that is to a certain extent close to bankruptcy if you cannot pay. Therefore, this debt to GDP is a key ratio. The target is to bring down this ratio to 120% by the year 2020 from now 175, and because it is assumed that 120% is sustainable in the long run.
Okay, so let me step back just for a second. I'm going to interject a general economics questions here that I think needs to be asked globally here. Sui Hong Jian, this idea of debt-to-GDP ratio, do you really believe that it is a fair measure of a country's ability to service its debt when GDP has been shown to have largely, generally related to the tax revenues of a country, but changes in GDP can be magnified both positively and negatively in changes in tax revenue? And tax revenue is what services national debt. Is looking at how much debt there is in a nation to the macro GDP, the consumption of Greek or American goods, is that really the right ratio we should be looking at?
Exactly. I think regarding to the some standard, especially from European Union level, I don't think it's it's a normal or it's a normal situation or phenomenon in economy, because as we know, if we understand what happened in European integration, we understand it's a kind of displine from some major member states, and they want to get a long time a stable economy. So certainly there will be some standard. So to
right,
some degree,
is this the right standard? I mean, it's a standard that's used to measure Japan, the United States. Every country in the world is using debt to GDP ratio, particularly since the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. Is that the right standard to be looking at? I was doing simple math yesterday, and when you look at 25, if you started 100 in debt and 100 in GDP, if that debt goes to 125, well, then debt is 125%. To GDP. Now, if you go the other way and you reduce GDP by 25, you actually end up with the percentage being at closer to 133%. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, are we looking at the wrong side of the equation?
Yes.
No, you must look at both the numerator and the denominator. And what happened to Greece is that their debt to GDP ratio rose so strongly because the denominator fell in the fifth year in a sequence by 25% in this severe recession over the last few years. So that is the problem. But the ratio as such is key for every country in order to pay back debt.
Giannis, if the Greek economy has fallen by, namely, 25% on the GDP side of this ratio over the last 5 years, are we seeing an adherence to austerity that effectively lowers short-term GDP in an almost guaranteed nature? Are we seeing austerity making this GDP ratio significantly worse, and we're just creating our own future and determining that Greece will always have a bad debt-to-GDP ratio?
For sure, it's getting worse if you lower GDP.
Sorry,
by austerity measures, things get worse.
Okay, let me go over to Giannis. Do you feel like this use of this ratio is creating bad policy, Giannis?
Brandon, my perspective of this is that both Europe and the International Monetary Fund have given up on Greece. They understand what you're saying. They understand very well that the Greek debt-to-GDP ratio is absolutely exponential and explosive. And all they've done in the recent decision at the Eurogroup level was effectively to give a big tranche of money to Greece just to keep Greece off the agenda for a year or so until they try to sort out something about Spain and Italy. And while they're doing that, the situation in Greece is going to become increasingly unsustainable.
Okay, so now talking about the EU summit, we have some Greek deal. So Hong Jian, actually, the Greek deal saying that lenders have agreed to cut interest rates on official loans, extend their maturity by 15 years to 30 years, and also grant Athens a 10-year interest repayment deferral. So is this the good policies?
Yeah, it's difficult to say it's good or not, but I think now, anyway, to get some more time for Greece to get its reform and to get more credibility from market, But of course, now, as we understand, even now it's get a deal between EU, IMF, and Greece. But I don't think it's, the Greek problem resolved totally. Because I think in another, especially before 2020, for Greece, for EU, for IMF, they need to get more compromise among them, especially how is the impact from the internal or domestic politics of Greece on this kind of agreement among three parties.
Mm. And Yanis, is that all the New Deal better or good or right policies, the new targets, the new buyback program? What do you see it?
Still, it is a shame that Europe is giving Orwellian language such a new whiff of life, because what we're having here is we don't have a deal. There was no deal. They did not come up with a deal that makes sense, that can be worked out in technical ways, and that adds up in terms of numbers. What they did was they failed to agree on how to reduce Greek debt by something like 40 billion, which is their target. They decided they want to reduce by 2020 Greek debt by about 40 billion. But they didn't decide on how to do that. The reduction in interest rates, that's about 2 billion. That's nothing. It's peanuts. The extension of the repayment period, both for the capital and the interest payments, this adds to the debt, does not subtract the debt. It makes it easier for 2020, but worse for 2030. So effectively, that is a non-issue. And then they left the bulk of the reduction in Greece's debt to a nebulous notion of a buyback of Greek bonds, which, of course, it can never work. By definition, it will fail, because if Greece is provided with sufficient funding from the EFSF to buy back its debt, then the value of its debt will rise, so it will be a non-gift in the end. There will be no point in doing it. The only way that it makes sense to buy your debt back is if nobody expects you to be able to do it, and then they will be able to sell bits and pieces of it to you at good prices. But if they think that you have the funds to buy a substantial proportion of it back, then it's effectively not going to work. So the Eurogroup have decided effectively to give Greece 30 to 40 billion euros to take it off the agenda for a year. When it comes back on the agenda in a year from now, it will be much, much worse than ever. And this is going to be detrimental not only to Greece's future, but also to the Eurozone's future. For 3 years now, European leaders have been not kicking the can down the road, as the Americans say. My expression is they've been kicking the snowball up the hill, and with every kick, the snowball gets bigger, and when its course reverses, it will become an avalanche that will destroy the Eurozone.
Mm. And Jan, how do you see this new targets, the 2020 goal and then the 2022 goal?
Well, in principle, I do agree with the program. It could be done better, but it is a compromise. But something had to be done in this moment because the situation is extremely urgent and tight. What should have been done is that the conditionalities is loosened, but this has not been done. It is probably even tightened, and that makes things very difficult to return to growth for Greece, and returning to growth is extremely important for Greece. But a debt cancellation at a huge scale was not done. It was pushed by the IMF, but in the end, the Eurozone member countries, the lenders, did not agree. Now we have this compromise with a buyback program, which in the details is not yet clear. I think it can work, but it will not be sufficient. So in a few years, probably we'll have to deal again with debt cancellation. That way, it is just a postponement of the problems.
All right. Now we have Sui Hong Jin, Yanis Varoufakis, and John Priway with us. And you're listening to Today on Beyond Beijing.
Listen to us on the go by subscribing to Today on Beyond Beijing's podcast on iTunes or listen online at radio.weibo.com and search for AM 846.
You're listening to Today on Beyond Beijing. I'm Brandon Blackburn Dwyer. Today's big debate is on the Eurozone's recession.
And I'm Zhao Yang. Today we are talking in the studio with Cui Hongjian from the China Institute of International Studies. And also joining us on the phone are Yanis Varoufakis from the University of Athens and also Yang Priva from HTW Berlin, the University of Applied Sciences. But now back to our panel discussions. Just now we talked about the Greece, a country very important in the Eurozone, but it's still the indebted country. But we will now shift our focus to another country, Germany. Actually, Yang, Germany has been the engine of growth and production for Europe, but its economy has shrunk by nearly a full percentage point and its growth is now under 1%. So is Germany's engine really running out of steam? And how much is it the Eurozone to blame for dragging down Germany, or is this other issues that dragging down Germany's economy?
I must correct the numbers you mentioned. Germany's growth this year in 2012 will be 0.8, so it is not negative. And in the last few quarters, there was a slight negative trend, but overall growth will be positive. And for next year, we forecast 1 percentage point of growth. So we are not in recession and will not be in recession most likely next year. Of course, forecasts, you never know, but that is the state we are in presently.
The phone
back. Yanis?
I leave.
Okay. Jan? Sorry, keep going.
Okay. The second point is, I don't think that Germany really was the engine of growth. We were one of the slowest growers in the European Union or in the Monetary Union in the last decade, together with Portugal and Italy. That is strange and not very well known. Our GDP growth from 2000 to 2010 was roughly 0.9% per year. This is one of the slowest growths in OECD. We are good in exports. We had high net exports up to 6% of GDP, but domestic demand is stagnant. Our real wages were frozen over more than 10 years. So Germany is not the engine of demand. We use or we have used the aggregate demand for goods from Greece, from Italy, from all these deficit countries, but we have produced and they have given the demand for this. So Germany's role is not very good in the past, and we have contributed as this seemingly strong economy in terms of exports to the crisis.
Well, Cui Hongjian, I mean, looking at that situation, how much self-interest do you see in Germany? Germany, often, a lot of its members of parliament complain about bailing out Southern Europe, but if the entity of Germany has been really the engine of supply and Southern Germany has been the engine of demand, isn't Germany a little hypocritical to be complaining about bailing out its biggest customers?
No. Yes.
You must.
Okay.
Oh,
sorry. Okay. Hey, well, Jan, we did get that. Yes, absolutely. So apparently,
yes.
My obnoxious question was a bit accurate. Let me get Hongjian on this.
Yes,
what do you think?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I need to get it briefly, and I'll try to gain more time to to a German professor. Yes. I think yes, it's a very logical view to say that okay, Germany should become a bigger you know, a buyer, especially to some other members countries of Eurozone, because one of the views to say okay why there is a crisis is Germany export too much in the last 10 years and consumer less, especially how is the lower situation, I mean lower consumption in internal market. And of course, compared with Greece, it's another situation, because Greek people, maybe they did less, but they consume too much like that. So I think it's a logic that I want to get a balance within Eurozone countries. But now the problem is how is the willingness from a German government, because I think if you want to get more demand from domestic market of Germany, which means there will be some more adjustment of the policy, especially how is the release more and more consumption for the German people. I don't think it's a good deal, especially for current German government.
And Yanis, actually, do you think the influence, how do you see the influence of Germany in the Eurozone? Is it lessened?
No, of course. Germany is the most influential part of the Eurozone. A large number of people within Germany and without Germany worry that Germany is becoming too influential and it's wielding too much power. That is not my criticism. Germany should lead, should play a hegemonic role. My criticism of Germany is that it is not doing that, that it is pretending that each country can survive fiscally on the basis of discipline in a monetary union, which is suffering the ill effects of a bad architectural design that did not manage to sustain the shockwaves of the great fiscal financial crisis of 2008. And the result of that financial crisis was that there was a major realignment in the European Union, within the Eurozone. And the result is that when you place the burden of adjustment on the indebted deficit countries, then very quickly the ill effects are felt in the surplus countries too. So Germany is now going to become the greatest victim of the fiscal consolidation in the south of Europe. And that is an irrational way of handling a crisis. There are no winners here. This is a crisis we did not have to have, at least not to the extent that we are having it. And all that it takes is a realization that this, as Jan said very, very courageously, this is not a debt crisis. Debt is the symptom of an architectural design fault which is being exposed as such by the financial crisis of 2008 and its aftermath.
All right, so let's look at the neighbor to Germany here, often called the other of the two twin pillars of the Eurozone, France. Moody's has just downgraded the national debt of France from AAA rating to one notch below. Jan Privé, do you see this as a realistic move? Is Moody's jumping the gun by saying that there's real cause for concern in France? Or are we seeing one of the twin pillars going to be taken down by political uncertainty?
Well, you never really know why Moody is doing this. So that is the problem with those rating agencies. You know that United States is also rated down, I think, by Standard & Poor's. So the reason why they did it is most likely that their export competitiveness is not so good. So they have, since a couple of years, trade deficit. And they have presently a sluggish economy, but they have not yet been in strong recession. So I think France is better than it is said in the media. And I can't really follow why it is downgraded, and I think we should not take it too serious. However, if France would get into a big problem, then the whole structure of the bailout system would fall, because, France is the second biggest economy in the Eurozone, and if it really comes into a situation like Italy, then we have a big problem. The reason why France's exports are weak is they exported to some extent to the other southern countries, and they lost competitiveness against Germany, because France is Germany's biggest export nation. So Germany exports to them, and Germany is freezing wages, and France is not. So Germany gained export competitiveness at the expense of France. So this is just, you can really very precisely see that the architecture of the Eurozone does not work if one country gains competitiveness all the time by a certain wage and price policy, and the other does not. So okay, that is the problem.
All right, so let me briefly, Sui Hongjian, on this question of should Moody's have downgraded France, do you see this as sort of a mysterious move, or is there a real reason for concern?
Yes, I think that, for example, we can have the I mean, the table of 16 the laws of competitiveness. I mean, the Moody gave the gave it to France on every country, maybe in the Eurozone, maybe except for Germany, like that. But I think I understand that now. Why it happened? I think maybe now we can find out some maybe disappointment, especially from the internal public opinion of France on this how to say this policy of the Hollande administration, since it took the position in the first half of this year, because so far we understand that because some problem, the government of France could not fulfill the promise. When the ruling party want to get power some months ago. So I think now, yes, certainly there are some problems for France, but it's not so bad like Moody said.
All right. With that, we're going to take a last pause in the conversation here. Sui Hong Jin, Yanis Varoufakis, Jan Privé with us. Last section of the show, we're going to look at the next steps for the Eurozone, what they should be doing, can be doing, will be doing, and what all that may mean for the future. You're listening to Today on Beyond Beijing.
Missed some of today's big debate? No need to panic. Follow us on iTunes. Just search for Today on Beyond Beijing and subscribe to have our podcast delivered to you every day.
I'm Emily Hennessy, and coming up in the Global Spotlight, John Artman will be bringing us all the tech news. He'll be looking at software, finding new drugs, consumer tech beyond smartphones and tablets, and who's using the internet here in China. Then in the Online Unleashed, I'll be bringing your reactions to a UK local council decision to remove children from a foster family's care because of the political party they support. All that and more in Today on Beyond Beijing.
You're listening to Today on Beyond Beijing. I'm Brandon Blackburn Dwyer. Today's big debate is on the Eurozone, which is in recession.
And I'm Zhao Yang. Today we are talking in the studio with Sui Hong Jin from the China Institute of International Studies. And also joined us on the phone are Yanis Varoufakis from the University of Athens and Jan Pruven from HTW Berlin, the University of Applied Sciences. But now back to our panel discussions. Actually, we talk different individual countries in the Eurozone. But for the next step of the Eurozone, Jan, actually, what should the nations of Europe do next?
I think for we must return to growth as soon as possible in all member countries. And for that reason, we need something like Eurobonds, that is a common liability for debt, for public debt, which is guaranteed by AAA or AA rated countries. That would help us to cope with the financial issues. And then we need to invest. There is so much to be done in Greece, in Spain, etc. And we should start to do this. And we cannot afford to have less growth, less output, higher unemployment. What is growing is unemployment. What should grow is GDP.
Mm. And Yanis, actually, our guest mentioned the growth and the euro bonds. So what do you think should be done by the Europe next? Has Europe already run out of all the fiscal and monetary tools that you get?
No, Europe is quite capable of overcoming this crisis as long as it does three things. We need to take three bold steps. I'm completely in agreement with Jan, but let me make more specific my proposal. The first thing we need to do is separate the banking crisis from each Eurozone member country, especially the indebted ones, from the sovereign debt one. That we can do very simply by ensuring that the money that goes from the center of the Eurozone, from the FSF and the ESM, to recapitalize the banks, does not become part of the national debt. That goes straight to those banks, and the FSF or ESM takes equity in these banks. Then in association with the European Central Bank, it dissolves the one that needs to be dissolved and sells back the shares of these banks into the private sector once it has cleansed them. That way, the banking crisis and the debt crisis be separate. The second thing we need to do, as Jan said, is Eurobonds. But I would like to see the ECB issue Eurobonds, just like the European Investment Bank issues Eurobonds, on behalf of member states for the part of the debt, not all of the debt, but for the part of the debt which is consistent with the Maastricht Treaty, 60% of GDP, and have the member states redeem those ECB bonds in the fullness of time, in 10, 20 years' time, but at interest rates that the ECB should be able to fetch in the money markets without guarantees from Germany, from the Netherlands, from the surplus countries. And the third thing we need to do, we need, as Jan said, to invest in Europe in order to get GDP growing, unemployment falling, and the way to do this is by using a gem that we have in Europe called the European Investment Bank, which is ready and willing to effectively implement a new deal for Europe, up to 8, 9, 10% of European GDP being invested in good private sector causes. But the only way that the European Investment Bank can do that is if the 50% of co-financing, which is now supposedly to come from nation states, which don't have the money to do it, is backed by ECB bonds of the sort that I proposed just a moment ago.
And Hong Jian, actually, what are on the top of agenda on your list, the first three or four things?
Pardon me?
What need to be done by the European countries?
Yeah, so far now, I think now, not only for the from the European Union and also from this especially major member states, they have more and more, you know, perspective how to overcome this crisis finally, and then how to take the chance of this crisis to get a stronger and a more integrated European Union like that. But of course now, regarding to the concrete tools for the next step, so far I think that there is only Eurobond not yet used by the European Union. But we understand now it because it gets a very strong opposition from Germany. So I don't think it's, how to say, it's a tool should be used recently, but of course now next year there is a general election in Germany, so I don't know what will happen after the general election.
And Jan, actually, for the outlook, will the Eurozone bounce back from the current recession, or is it here to stay? So it is a L shape or U shape?
I don't know. But I just would like to mention one thing at this juncture. If you look at the indebtedness and at the deficits, the budget deficits, and compare the Eurozone with UK or with the United States, Eurozone stands better in comparison than UK and United States. The strange thing is that the Eurozone does not act in a proper well-organized, common way, but the United States is a nation state and UK is. So why don't we organize ourselves and then we might turn around and have and can better deal with the debt that we have? So that is my proposition, that we should integrate stronger with or without euro bonds in the short run, but we should integrate ourselves better in such a way that we form a nation state with solidarity among the stronger and the less strong countries and come out with growth and less unemployment.
All right. So let's looking at it here, wrap up here, a couple of yes and no questions to wrap us up here. The first one, the current recession, yes or no? Has austerity caused the current recession? Yes or no? Yanis Varoufakis?
Yes.
Hong Jian?
Partly yes.
Partly yes. Jan?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, it is. Now, looking forward, has the Eurozone made the crisis made it stronger or weaker looking to the future? Stronger or weaker, Yanis?
Infinitely weaker.
Infinitely weaker. Hong Jian?
Strongly once they do good homework.
And Jan?
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to see if it gets to be stronger.
Okay.
For the short term, certainly weaker.
All right, and overall, very quickly, optimistic or pessimistic about the Eurozone? Optimistic or pessimistic, Yanis?
Pessimistic, I'm afraid.
Okay, Hong Jian?
Pessimistic as right now.
Jan?
and the long-term optimistic and the short-term pessimistic.
All right, well, on those mixed answers here, this ends this great debate. My thanks to our guests. We've had Sui Hong Jian, Yanis Varoufakis, and Jan Privé. Tomorrow's big debate is on the U.S. oil industry, but today with us now for the Global Talk.